everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Proud to Work in Cannabis podcast. Very excited for this episode. Today I have Todd Harrison, who's the founding partner and chief investment officer at CBI Management. Todd, I feel like we've built a quick friendship over the last couple of weeks working on Mission Green together. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. It's CB1 Capital Management.
CB1 Management. I totally messed that up by saying CBI. CB1.
CB1, like the receptor, like the cannabinoid receptor, the CB1 receptor, the CB2 receptor. So that was the genesis. And I can't take credit for that. That was Lauren DeFalco's idea, but I love it. So we stuck with it.
Well, Todd, we have a long list of things that I'm excited to double click on with you today. But to start us out with, can you talk to us about how you decided to go into the cannabis industry? I think you have one of the most inspiring stories in terms of what drew you to cannabis.
Yeah, well, thank you. And first, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I've been a fan of what you've been doing over at Banks for some time. And, you know, having the opportunity to work with you and to help be part of the forward solution has been, let's just say, you've delivered on all of the promises that preceded you, and I appreciate the opportunity. So, I'm going to be 54 in a couple of weeks, and I tell you that because I, you know, spent my childhood and, you know, college career trying to figure out how to get into Wall Street, and, you know, started at Morgan Stanley when I was, 2 days out of Syracuse University, and chased that brass ring, through Morgan Stanley and the hedge fund world, and landed at Jim Cramer's desk of all places, and was president and ran trading there. And he had stepped away at the time. That first year that he stepped away to CNBC full time is when the planes hit. Seeing people holding hands and jumping from the World Trade Center is not something that you can easily look away from, and nor did we. That set in motion this process of discovery. I went to see at some point thereafter a woman by the name of Dr. Julie Holland, who unbeknownst to me was really and remains a pioneer in the cannabis research side of, and among others, right? Does tremendous work on other alternative therapies. And I didn't know this at the time. I just knew that I was very depressed and life had changed dramatically. And she opened my eyes to the science and pointed me in the direction of GW Pharmaceuticals, which was a cannabinoid biotech company. It still is, but under a different name. And I started studying the history and the weaponization of this plant and how, that just the war on drugs came to be and how it continued to be and remains in place. So there wasn't a grand gesture. I started to research it, and as I say, you sort of open up that you go down that rabbit hole for the intellectually curious, and we haven't come back. You know, this is an amazing plant. The therapeutic properties are terrific. We hung a shingle, I think it was what, 6-7 years ago, as a wellness fund, as a long short hedge fund. We added an advisory capacity to that when some of our portfolio companies had asked us to work in that capacity with them. Obviously very stringent compliance protocols in place. But nonetheless, you know, we work with a lot of companies. We invest in some of them as able. And we also work with Mission Green, as you alluded to, which is, you know, what I think I'm most proud of in terms of helping to affect positive change and to unwind the second prohibition, which I think we're in the process of doing now.
So can we talk for a little bit about Mission Green? And this is actually how Todd, you and I ended up meeting each other, was through Mission Green, which I didn't know a lot about it before you. Actually, our friend Rosie Matteo connected us to then all connect to this project. So could you talk to us about Weldon and the Mission Green project and what we're doing with it?
Yeah, I would love to. I mean, Weldon is, you know, he's a unique individual. He is a music producer and he lives in Utah. I think it was the early 90s, early to mid 90s when, and I think it was the Dog Pound he was working with, and they were traveling to Utah to record music. And they didn't like that in Utah, evidently, and set up a sting operation. And they set him up to sell $300 worth of weed on three separate occasions. Fast forward, there was, I think, 110 year mandatory minimum sentencing they tried to slap on him for not, you know, turning on Snoop Dogg, which, you know, there was no drugs involved, so he couldn't turn on Snoop Dogg, nor would he do it. But the long and the short of it, he served 13 years, and he had a wide array of support from Kim Kardashian to the Koch brothers, from Mike Lee, the senator, to to these rappers, like this, you know, the strangest of bedfellows, as we shall say, to come together to really try to unwind this very archaic war on drugs and very damaging, you know, as I say, it's a stain on the soul of our country. And while there's been, you know, he got pardoned, when was this, about 4 or 5 years ago, and he's been spending most of his time, if not all of his time, trying to get everybody else out.
So 13, I mean, just to make sure that I heard this correctly, 13 years for selling $300 a couple times worth of cannabis. I mean, if you think about it, we're all doing that effectively every single day now. I mean, $300 worth of cannabis is nothing.
Well, it wasn't 13 years. It was 55 years mandatory minimum. It was such an egregious sentencing that the federal judge who sentenced him stepped off the bench. He was a Republican judge, I believe. And he stepped off the bench to join Weldon in his fight to unwind these archaic laws. And they did, the first step back. They failed the first time. They came back again, this time with some muscle, and they got it passed. I feel like that script is sort of playing out again as it pertains to some of the legislation we're currently seeing. And long and the short of it is, a couple of years ago, our good friend, or my friend Jeff Schultz, introduced me to Weldon. And I was taken by his story. I've tried to help raise money and do a number of different things to help support him, because I believe he's the tip of the spear. I really do believe he's the tip of the spear. He has the support. He has the respect of both sides of the aisle. He has the respect of the criminal justice because he did his time. He has the respect of social justice because he is in the process of helping to represent those people, and he is working with the industry as well, which I think has gotten a fair amount of bad reputation, and some in some cases deservedly so. But there are some good people out there, as you know. And so the idea when we came back in January, just to bring this in for a landing, was, you know, to build the Mission Green Alliance, which was be the change you hope to see. If you're going to buy legal cannabis, you can round up your purchase or otherwise donate to affect federal cannabis reform. And that rolled out now at Glass House. It's rolled out at AIR. It's rolling out at TerraSend. It's rolling out at PharmaCann. It's rolling back out with Verano and a number of others who have come to support this. And there's no asking anybody to write a check. We're asking to work together to enable this to be a grassroots effort to support Weldon, to support the people who can't support themselves.
And what a great way, talk about reaching the masses. And so, I mean, if every single dispensary in America rolled this out and every person that checked out, I mean, think about it. When you go into every single time I go into the grocery store, they're asking me to round up for whatever that day's cause is. And so I mean, shout out to Glass House and TerraSend and AIR and Verano and all the partners who have gotten in on this to have their customers round up so that we don't have people serving unjust sentences. I mean, Weldon's never going to get those. I mean, thank God he wasn't in for 55 years, but he's never going to get those 13 years back. And there's people sitting in prison right now. And so for consumers to be able to round up, I mean, these are consumers purchasing cannabis when there's people sitting in federal prison for basically doing the same thing. I mean, I think every single consumer in America needs to be rounding their purchase up and then some, and every dispensary needs to be getting into this program. If I'm a dispensary listening right now, or I'm a bud tender listening right now, how do I enroll my dispensary into this program? Because I think everyone in the cannabis industry needs to be part of this program. Full stop.
Yeah, well, we built a landing page, Mission Green Alliance. It says click here as a dispensary. We also have a merchandise store. You also have the ability to donate directly. And to your point, it's not just the operators, right? PharmaCann too, but it's the, you know, the headsets of the world and the Springbigs of the world and the Vanks, thank you so much, of the world, who, you know, are donating their time and support and man hours in a time where people are very happy just to have a job. It's very, very tough out there right now. We haven't even kind of gotten into that side of the equation of sort of the industry landscape. But there's another side to this cycle. And I think as we get there, you know, how you navigated the downturn, who you chose to associate yourself with, and who and what you have decided to do with your time, like how you spend your days. It's easy to spend them on Twitter, like, you know, commiserating, or you can actually, you know, pick up a shovel and start digging and try to help to move this, and that's what we've done. And thank you for that support as well, because we're talking to the Salts of the world, talking to the Swedes of the world, talking to Dutchie. We're trying to get this as a plug and play, set it and forget it, so that it doesn't have to be a laborious effort. So that's what we've been trying to do, and it's a labor of love, because it needs to be done.
And for an additional, if you're somebody that works in the industry and you want to learn more about this, you can go to banks.com and search Mission Green. And on Mission Green has a beautifully built out profile page. And there's also a training where you can go and you can take, actually there's two trainings, and you can take both trainings to hear directly from Weldon. You can hear about this project, and you can take a retail training to understand how to speak to consumers about rounding up. And when you complete this, you'll have a special Mission Green badge on your profile. And for everybody that completes this, Banks is donating $1. So let's get, I hope from this podcast, we can have 1,000 people go and take this training, spread the word, and that will be $1,000 that Banks donates directly to Mission Green. So it's an amazing cause. And Todd, obviously, shout out to you for really, Todd has been conducting all of us, right? We're all trying to help, but like Todd's really conducting. And of course, Weldon's coming onto the show soon. Special shout out to Weldon. You guys are bringing this together, and I think we can change the lives of a million. Switching gears to what you just started to talk about, the state of the industry, and I like what you just said around pick up a shovel. I was listening to the Tim Ferriss podcast this weekend, and Seth Godin was on, and he said, I love this quote, he said, we get to pick our attitude, and it's the only thing each of us truly gets to pick. And I was really been thinking about that a lot this week, because there's a lot not going well in the cannabis industry, right? I own a hiring company, and I get on the phone with our customers who tell me they're going to have to do another eighth round of layoffs because their taxes became due and they can't pay their taxes in 280E. And there's so much messed up in this industry right now, and a lot of people are folding. They're not able to keep going. And so, I'm doing my best every day to have a positive outlook on it and say, how can we make it through this time and get to the other side? But like, it is really, really hard. So what are you seeing out there, and give us your take on the state of the industry? Because from where I'm sitting, things are not looking pretty right now.
Yeah, no, it's dark. I think it's 847 days now since the cannabis sector topped. And I understand the cannabis sector, at least as measured by stocks, and the cannabis industry are not the same conversation, but they do sort of move in the same tracks. And I bring this up because this is now over 2 years, almost 2.5 years of a tunnel. And the reason that I chose for most of that time to get behind Weldon and support him was because we need to move the boulder the first 2 inches from a federal standpoint and get some legislation, whether that's banking or whether, there needs to be some movement. And we came pretty close last year. We came very close at the end of last year. But at the end of the day, it was thwarted because, Mitch McConnell, if you haven't read The Scorpion and the Frog, I suggest you do, but that sort of sums up Schumer.
Wait, what was it? What should people read?
The Scorpion and the Frog. It's a parable about people's natural instincts. And, Chuck Schumer left us vulnerable by leaving it to the last minute. And Mitch McConnell stung him because that's what scorpions do. But there was a lot of education around it. There was a lot of movement. There was a lot of work done. And I bring that up because I do think that is the low-hanging fruit. We were told coming into this year that it would probably be introduced by the end of the first quarter. And then, of course, you had Silicon Valley and the other bank failures and everything that pushed out by a month. But we are expecting to see that work its way through the Senate by the end of, by the summer break, and hopefully the House in the third quarter. And then you have that HHS DEA FDA process, which, there's also a fair amount of chatter been going around that they've landed on a Schedule 3, and it's a question of when is that communicated. I don't know if that's true, but it's been going around, put it that way. You're not seeing it out there, by the way, in the volume of the price. But if either of those things happen, and let's just say Schedule 3, where you have 280E goes away immediately, and you have the ability to get banking services and even uplist, right? It solves a lot of problems. And I think, the industry is going to re-rate rather quickly. A lot of people, as you said, have given up. They've tapped out. We have always said, and the reason we've worked so hard to try to be part of that change, is that, you can hold your breath for a minute under 10 feet of water, but you can't hold your breath for 10 minutes under a foot of water. And we've been now, it's been 847 days. Jeff Sessions rescinded the Cole memo in 2018. This is predating all of that, but that's when the problem started. So we do think we'll get some legislation. We do think there's other things in motion. And certainly, you have a Garland memo. You have a lot of things that could happen here to alleviate the pressure, but something needs to give because it's untenable. This is Y2K 2.0. Right? Or this is, all of these pets.coms and all of these different, high valuation tech companies are entering it. And there's going to be a handful of names that come out, the FANG, that emerge and survive because they have the scale and ability to do that. And that's, winning the war of attrition is not necessarily winning, but you do what you have to survive. And until the rules change, until 280E is addressed, until there's banking services, until we are on an even playing field, it's going to continue to be bifurcated, and there's going to be a handful of winners and a lot of pain. But I think change is coming. So that's if that's true, I think it'll flip the switch.
So when you say that you think change is coming, for people out there listening, what makes you think that change is coming, and what makes you think that this time is going to be different? That's part one of my question, and I do have a part two, but let's start there.
No, it's a fair question. Fool me seven times, shame on you, I think. Fool me eight times, shame on me. The reason I think it's different.
Seven times. I thought it was full.
Which bank has failed seven times? Okay, pardon me.
I was laughing because I was thinking about the saying, fool me once, shame on. Right. And it's been seven times. Oh, my God.
It's been seven times. So you can't, it's like if you're a Ferris Bueller fan, produce the corpse and we'll release Sloan, right? I mean, that's where we are. Nobody believes. And I actually think that's really bullish as long as we get something. But to your point about why is it different? One, I'm just looking at, what's been published, publicly. Whether it's, through the marijuana moments or the Natalie Ferdinand of Politico, there's been enough quotes that support the things that we've been hearing that suggest that they do actually have an agenda to get banking through. As I said to one of the Congress people when I was in D.C., one of the several times I was in D.C. this year, we want to write you checks. We want to write you a check. But to write you a check, we need a bank. And without banking, we can't write you a check. And surprisingly, that seemed to resonate. But I think that's sort of the low-hanging fruit. That's the way I understood it. I understand they want to get it out of the way by the third quarter so that it doesn't have a repeat of last year. But there was a lot of work being done already, and it's cumulative in terms of the awareness and the education that's been done on the Hill by so many staffers and so many people who have been really putting the time in, right? Not people, and as it was explained to me in my last trip, Carson, so it said, D.C. is designed to move slow. States are designed to be more nimble. But in D.C. speak, the education and the evolution of cannabis has been tremendous, right? If you're not looking at a stock prices and a screen and a chart, you're like, okay, you're probably right. The education, if you had these conversations 5 years ago, you're not having these conversations 5 years ago. We were on the Hill on 420 smoking weed. I mean, it's moving forward, is my point. So I do think this time is different in terms of the legislation, but I also think the conventional wisdom is that you see something from this expedited review of the scheduling of cannabis. I think the surprise could be that it happens sooner rather than later.
What can people, and so the second, and look, I before I go into the second part of my question, I'll share it. Last year when we're in an organization called NCR, National Roundtable Organization, and Weldon was involved. I think that's actually how I met Weldon. But anyway, I went to the trip last year in D.C., and I forget, one of the people that spoke to us, he was a Republican senator, and he said to us, look, guys, in D.C., it's like you're climbing up a mountain, and every time more rocks get put into the backpack, it gets harder to get up. So he was explaining that as last year we were trying to move into this more comprehensive bill, it's harder to get it done. So I thought that was a good takeaway, and I think it sounds kind of like what you're saying. DC is designed to move slowly, and
it's got to be incremental. I mean, that's really the only way it moves, because if you think about it, just taking a step back rationally, we all think it should be descheduled. Raise your hand. I raise my hand, right? But that's like three or four steps away. But that has to be an act of Congress. And when you have more and more of these senators who are making money now and employing people because they have state siloed cannabis, you know, it's going to be a tougher, you know, a tougher pull than incremental reform, which is allowing these businesses to thrive, or in the case of New York, survive without some sort of federal reform and banking. What you're saying, you know, Jeff Schultz said to me, he said it another way, the more ornaments you hang on a tree, the more likely it is to fall over. I think what happened last year was, as we got closer and closer to it, and Axios broke the story, you had a handful of CEOs, who shall remain nameless, who put a hard press on to get uplisting, and, you know, hit tilt in the process. And I don't know if that's true versus, you know, like I said, the scorpion and the frog. And because I think the Democrats tried to placate the left and go for a more comprehensive, as we were just talking about, reform as opposed to incremental reform, and then pivot back to SAFE Plus, this package at the end of the year. That was their plan. And then it got thwarted. You know, Mitch McConnell's from Kentucky. There's a lot of alcohol companies in Kentucky. You know, I do the math. But I do think that's cumulative in terms of the work, to go back to part one of your question, that we'll see it. And I think we're going to see it, and people are going to shift their attention to 280E. And there's always going to be an issue until there's not an issue. But when there's not an issue, and as we work through these issues more likely, incrementally, you're going to see some of these companies are going to emerge on the other side and do really special things, both for their investors and as companies, as part of the American economic landscape. Right. This is an industry that deserves to be heard. The way that it was shut out is a travesty. As I said, on the history of this country, this is a real black marker on the history of this country. But I do think that on the other side, this is going to be something that we can look back on. As I've told my kids since they were, you know, in grade school, by the time you're in college, it's going to be legal. And they thought I was full of shit. Now it's legal. And I'm like, by the time you're in college, they're going to realize that this is going to be used for all these different conditions that they realize now, because they couldn't test for it, because, or they couldn't, you know, find it because it was federally Schedule One, and you couldn't test it for anything other than bad. So all of these things, as we move forward and you take a step back, where are we going to be in 20 years? Like, we're going to be able to walk in somewhere and have a custom cannabinoid profile that's specifically suited to our own biomechanism. And like, that's going to be our vitamin, call it. And it's just a unique science that I don't think we're really even scratching the surface of how it can help mankind.
Hopefully by the time your kids are parents, by the time you're a grandfather, hopefully it's descheduled at a minimum.
God, I hope you're right. I mean, if it's not, I don't know if I'll make it that long, if I could be honest. But
Oh my God. You know, switching gears a little bit on the investing side, you're an investor in the space. What kind of companies are you the most bullish on? Are you the most bullish on multi-state operators that are vertically integrated? Are you bullish on ancillary businesses? Talk to us about sort of what has been your investment thesis coming into this space, and what gets you the most excited about types of businesses that you think are the long-term winners?
Yeah, I think it's about the people. It's about the jockey over the horse. A lot of horses out there. It goes back to, you know, pets.com versus those FANG stocks. Like, you know, history rhymes, right? Even the first prohibition, history rhymes, like all the companies that came out of that process. But it's not like a one particular tier, one particular segment. And, you know, I made the joke, the morbid sort of gallows humor joke last night on a call with a colleague of mine, that I felt like this was the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan, and we're all running onto the beach to get our cannabis investments, and like, you know, how many of those people made it to the other side of the beach. And it sort of feels that way. So like, we're looking at the operators, and it's not just by the tiers. Like, there's good tier one companies. Like, we think Green Thumb and Verano, those are our tier one picks. But like, as you go down that sort of totem pole, you know, you start to come across things like, you know, the TerrAscends or the Errors, and we work with these companies, we're investing in these companies, all those usual disclaimers, right? I'm not touting anything. I just, you know, it's really about the people. And you know, we look at Glass House or Forefront and say, these guys can, and girls and people can produce really, really good quality cannabis at scale, and they can do it, consistently over time. And that's, you know, as the curve comes down from a pricing standpoint, which it will inevitably over time, and volumes continue to expand as they have continually over time, and will continually over time as the illicit market is cannibalized, right? That's where the growth is going to be. And that's where the value is going to be in sticking it out over these 846 days that, since the last pop, when we've all had conversations with God and said, what exactly are we doing? But there's another side here. And there's good people in this industry across all this, Weldon and I talk about it all the time. You call it whatever the visualization is. You have five seats at the table. One of them is the MSOs. One of them is criminal justice. One of them is social justice. One of them is legacy operators. And, even throw the big box, retail or, CPG in there. And, everybody sees it. They're all pulling on the baby. Right, but if we don't figure out a way for the baby to survive, nobody's gonna enjoy the baby, right? And everybody's pulling on the baby, and there's a contingency out there that believes that this is all sort of scripted, that this was designed so that big alcohol and tobacco, whoever else, those people are gonna swoop in and take these assets on pennies of the dollar, and that process is going on right now. But I think what's lost in that is the human capital. It's a tough supply chain. This is a tough industry. And, if you don't do what you love and love what you do and know what you're doing and be able to do it well day after day, despite not getting paid for it for the last 5 years, which is sort of what the industry is going through right now. And that's if you're lucky to still be fighting after all this time. You have to have your why. What's your why? And I think ultimately, is back to your question, what are the stocks? Whether it's a Jason Wilder or George Arcos or Graham over, and those folks at Glasshouse, and even sort of, some of the torque that would be in an air or something like that. I do believe that there's another side to this,
For people, we don't have video yet, but Todd has two awesome dogs three dogs. I only see two. Not to take you off the tangent, but let's hear, can you tell me a little bit about the dogs?
Well, these are our rescues. We have two rescues, Jeff Jacks, the one who's a loudmouth, and that's Sandy, the hound here. Or we have a micro Bernedoodle that is running around somewhere. This is a doghouse. So I apologize.
This is just definitely no. I like that. I love the dogs. The dogs have been coming in and out throughout the whole episode. Well, I mean, look, 846 days. That's the first time that I've. That number is
a long time.
Been highlighted. It's a long time. So how do you? It's a long time, and I think a lot of people in this market are feeling a lot of pain, and it's not just in cannabis. There's a lot of people out there, whether they're founders that raised a lot of VC capital and they can't grow into their valuation, or they're VCs that invest in a lot of companies and they feel like their book's upside down, or they're cannabis operators, or they're cannabis investors. There's a lot of people in this market right now that are really feeling the pinch. I mean, myself included, it sounds like you included. So what do you do for yourself to get through these 846 days? And how are you getting through it to make sure that you can stay on the field? Because at the end of the day, we all need to stay on the field. So what do you do for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's a great question, and I can... I can cuff it and say, I do the Peloton daily, and I play with my dogs, and I focus on the happiness of and the laughter of my children, and life is good. But that's not as my dog is. You could probably hear in the background. I'll tell you, I'm fully shed. It's not easy. You got to make mental health and mental acuity and focus. Require you to stay healthy in more ways than just physically. And this has taken its toll. It's not even like I joke around. It's not joking around. I had the conversation with a number of people who have been in this, for 5-6 years, and they're like, if I knew what I knew then, now, I would have never done this. But at this point, I'm going to keep going. And and that's sort of the mindset that I come to work with, because at this point, you'll have to pry this industry from my cold dead fingers. We have done the work. We're confident in our, in the companies that we own. They're not reliant, at least a lot of the names that I've talked about are not reliant on federal reform. They would certainly benefit from it. But there's opportunities out there, even in this landscape, to see what people are doing in tough times. And that's, I guess, t- tying this all back together, that's what makes the winners and the sinners is the ability to keep going and identify alternative solutions or, find synergies or optimize your operations or make smart decisions about the sequencing of your growth. Right now, I think the pendulum swung way too far that people are back in survival mode, just show me how much operating cash flow. And by the way, by the time we get to, okay, here I am, operating cash flow, you'll see some legislative or regulatory reform. And then all of these companies that have had to do all of the things that every company that you said, oh, it's not just cannabis. But it is just cannabis when you're talking about a 70% effective tax rate, and you're talking about the inability to bank, and you're talking about the inability to take credit cards, right? So all of these things, which is almost like a training camp or like a boot camp, when these restrictions come off, the companies that survive are going to have the ability, the mindset, and the acumen to really make their mark on a level playing field, right? And if you could win in this environment or survive in this environment, you're going to make a fortune. Right, you just got to get through it. If you're going through hell, keep going. Right, and so I mean, that's my mindset at this point. Like, I just want to get there for my investors, for my family, for this fucking dog that won't stop barking at me right now. I want to get there because that's where it is. Right, like this is where we're going. And we alluded to the first prohibition with the Great Depression and sort of that, that being what it was. History rhymes. Like the second prohibition is going to come off. It's going to come through a time of economic, the hardship, unfortunately, at least for a lot of the country. But, during the Depression, if that's the down, let's say that's the downside, like 75% of America worked during the Depression. Continental Airlines, Tyson Foods, Disney, all born in the Great Depression, right? Like, it's about how you approach it.
Or think about 2008. I mean, Airbnb started in 2008 in the housing crisis. I mean, every time there's one of these pullbacks, some iconic companies are born.
Yeah, and this is, I don't know if you could, listen, I've been in the markets for 34 years. I've never seen it. I mean, I sat here today and watched 17 million notional trading across the entire U.S. cannabis landscape, which includes all the double accounting between the two exchanges, all the ETFs, and 17 million, across the entire U.S. cannabis landscape that's worth now like $8.8 billion on the aggregate, and they'll probably do 10 to 15, depending. In revenue. So you're trading less than one time sales as an industry. And if you know where to look, I think this is a good time to look.
Well, Todd, I really appreciate that perspective. And I think it's nice that people are sharing that, like, this is a hard time, because I feel like a lot of people are having these conversations, but not publicly. And so then people find themselves in a moment where they're like, wow, I'm the only one that's feeling like my business or my book is really struggling.
They say, Carson, there's no shame in admitting it's hard. There's only shame in pretending it's not.
I like that. Well, Todd, we're coming up on our time here, but my last question for you is, I'm actually super inspired by everything that you just said, and it's, I feel the same sentiment of, like, we need to keep going, and we need to make it to their side, and the reward is going to be so much bigger, and it's going to be, I think it's really hard for people to even understand how challenging the cannabis industry has been, but what is the one thing that you are most looking forward to in the cannabis industry for the next 5 years? It can be something personally that you're excited about. It can be something with investing. It can be something social. It can be something on the Mission Green side. Like, what's the one thing that you're really, really, like, most looking forward to?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say progress, but I feel like that's sort of laying up. It's really being on the right side of history and being sort of in, I wouldn't even say I'm in the room. I'm in the area. I'm in the area of the room. I'm in the building or a building. I'm in the city of the whatever. This is a hell of a time to be alive when you think about taking a step back historically. And all the people who are suffered, and you had said all the people in federal prison, 90% of them are in state prison. So we need the HOPE Act. Along with the SAFE Act, to help incentivize state-level expungements and pardons, or state-level expungements, pardon me. But we need to get people, like, there rarely a day goes by when the market closes that I won't pull out my personal stash and say, well, am I trying this Glass House? Do I want this Verano? Do I want this Mission? Like, what am I in the mood for? Like, some people would look at a wine, right? That progress, that normalization, and it relaxes me, and it helps me to like get ready for my night, or depending on what it is. And I just think that the understanding, societal sort of understanding of as we like to say at CB1, the efficacious agility of this plant. Right, I took it for PTSD. My partner took it for epileptic seizure disorder. I know people who take it for anxiety. I know people who take it for Crohn's. I know people who take it for the sciatica. And yet, it's Schedule 1, right? And it's just such a fucking travesty. I'm sorry. So, I'm excited for that, because within 5 years, I think, we're going to see some pretty meaningful changes on how our country treats cannabis and how it treats people who use cannabis. And if it doesn't, then we'll be back here fighting for it still.
Well, Todd, I'm excited to have you on at least once a year. So thank you so much for your time and for everything that you've done for the industry. If folks want to get in touch with you or follow you, I know you're on Twitter. What is your Twitter handle? How can folks follow along and see the updates that you're sharing with the industry regularly?
I mean, I have Todd_Harrison on Twitter. I have a Substack called Cannabis Confidential, which I use by appointment these days, or Todd@CB1Cap.com, the one being a number and the rest being letters. I appreciate you, Carson. I feel like you don't get the snaps you deserve, not only for Mission Green, but for trying to help people support their families through something that is going through a bit of a metamorphosis in terms of public perception. So you're doing God's work, Roy Blank Farm. And I appreciate everything you guys are doing over there.
Well, I appreciate it, Todd. Thank you again for coming on. It was great to see you. Great to see your dogs. Excited to see them hopefully in person sometime. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
You as well. Thank you so much.